The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to Taking Stock right here. It is the 7th of the December, 2023. It's damp outside, but I've got the warmth in the form of a lovely jumper here. It's Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare of SP Angel. Yo, fella.
How are you doing, Justin?
Yeah, I'm good. And Vadim, thanks for coming along and joining me on this, because largely been chatting to myself. But we get lots of comments. And by all means, everyone, join in the comments. We've had some news out on Plarium today. Vadim's just been looking at that. And it is rising. Finally, it's having a little bit of bounce. It's been very painful for people. But by all means, if you like the content, hit that thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. And of course, the Vox Markets app is free. Download that. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Now, the theme I want to start off with, Vadim, before we get into Plarium and some other bits of news, is... I said, in this market, you need this quality to make money. And I want people to guess what it is, okay? So Rifisov, straight away, the badge for the first comment of the day goes to Rifisov, and he says, luck. And he says, and he says, okay, I'm supposed to say patience or resilience. RH says resilience. But and my thoughts, it is patience, Vadim. You know, because I look at Future PLC today, and I've been stalking that company for a long time. It's one of the ex-darlings of the stock market. In fact, I'll show you the chart of Future previously. Let me share the screen. This is the AIM Ultra Index, by the way. You know, down since September 2021, down for 2 years, pretty much, down 48%. But we are having a bit of a bounce. And like you see here, let me take some of the moving averages off. It's a bit messy. You can see here that it is above the 50-day moving average now. And these sort of previous areas here, that 1 720, 730, could be good. I think we're having a little bit of bounce here. But I'll show you Future PLC, right? So I was waiting. I thought, shall I get in before the results come out? And I thought, oh, no, I'll wait. It's a good job I waited. Look at the chart there. Today, it dropped by 30%. It's bounced back up. It's really come back up and spiked really down low. But it is, I mean, if you look at the previous chart here, going up, you know, it's been a darling. You know, it's gone from like a couple of years ago, back at £1.30, up to 40 quid a share. You know, so it's a cracking company. And it's in digital media, advertising. They own a lot of brands. They own Go Compare as well. But a lot of the big branded magazines and Marie Claire, all that, they own all that kind of stuff. So it's a good company. A new CEO just come in. But of course, in this market, it's hard work, advertising and all that. But I think they were unfairly hit today. The revenue missed and top line a little bit, but not hugely. But that's the result, isn't it? In the market today, it's really risk-averse, isn't it?
Correct. Absolutely. And that's what you'd expect if you've missed anything. If you miss anything, that, you know, you're disproportionately punished, your stock is. You know what I mean? So, you know, better to wait, in my opinion. Especially if you're teetering on, buying right before an event like results. I can't help but think you'll get more upside if you wait, get the result you want. It probably won't all get priced in. You see what I mean? As opposed to, you know, in a difficult market like this, we know what happens with the downside when it goes wrong, like you just described. Yeah. But on the other side of the equation, let's say you waited and they smashed it, you probably wouldn't get the full rally.
Exactly.
So you're better off knowing that there's, you know, it's the result is positive, and then trying to get in as quickly as possible.
Yeah, because what happens is, you know, a lot of people in a stock like this, for example, even if they exceeded, you'd still get people who are underwater taking profit, you know, so
exactly.
It would suppress the actual, what should have happened in the share price, it would suppress that. Let's have a quick look at the indices, see what they're doing here on another stock exchange. Do you know what? The only one up, and that's only just recently, I've been looking at this morning, but the AIM All share is up today. 0.27%. Everything else down. FTSE 100 down 0.11%. FTSE 250 domestically, big companies 0.4. It's a safe play. Look, in the FTSE 100, all the sort of utilities are rising. National Grid, Severn Trent, Smiths, utilities. What are the fallers today? On the airway, airlines, BA plus BT was down. Vodafone, so telecoms. But okay.
How's the 250 doing? Sorry, I missed that.
The 250 is down slightly, 0.41%. But is that a cracking rally? In fact,
that's why I wanted to focus on that too a little bit, because I'm seeing a lot of the mid caps. You know, you and I have discussed in the past on the podcast. There's a suite of mid caps that I just think we're starting to see a proper rally in them. You know, we discuss stocks. Look, we're going to talk about Plarium later on, but, you know, we discuss stocks like Deliveroo, like AO.com, even EasyJet. And, you know, they've done well. The last 10 days I've seen a good rally in these stocks, and I think there's a lot more mileage in them to go. Some less so, like, the ASOSes and BoohooSes, although Boohoo has had a good rally too in this last 10 days. So, it feels like we're seeing a bit of a comeback. We'll see mid-caps rally first, and then usually, hopefully it then trickles down into small caps.
Yeah, well, look at that. I mean, this is the low of FTSE 250 back on the 13th of October, 2022. It's now up almost 12% from that. It did have a retest that low recently on the 27th of October this year. So a year later, October is an awful month. Look at that. October is the low last year, and it retested that, revisited it, but not as low. And now it's up sort of 12% from the low. So it's very. I don't know what it was very telling yesterday. It's all about interest rates and inflation, all that stuff. But the bond market yesterday was very interesting because if I show you, there's a 2-year bond, this is the yield, by the way. It's just crossing what's called a 200-day moving average, support there, and that was at 4.5. Now, the last time I actually crossed this, it did dip down once, but it didn't actually go below it. The last time it crossed it was on the upside, way back in literally February 2021, and that was the tail end, pretty much, of the bull market. So the bonds, of course, yields inversely related to the markets, and so that crossed the 200-day moving average, and I did tweet out yesterday, okay, where's the start of the bull market? Because this is significant in my mind. The bond yield is dropping to the point now it's crossing over the 200-day moving average. We're seeing lots of predictions of interest rates coming down, and so it's not going to be a smooth rally. But I do think that's quite significant that's done that, and I think we may see markets start to rally year end. Looking at stats, even when you see a market that's down for 2 years on a row,
Absolutely. This is not highly unusual for it to be a down market for this long. It's really long. So it's bound to eventually recover. And you're right. I guess, if you look at some of the, like yields and things like that, they're all pointing more in the right direction than they were, say, a year ago. Just so you know, the everything you said about the broader market is reflected in the biotech and healthcare market as well. If you look at a barometer of the healthcare market is the Nasdaq Biotech Index, and it's shown exactly that. It topped out in something like June, July, or August 2021, 5,500, dropped all the way down to a low of 3,300 in October 2022. Then rallied for 30%. And then erased all of those rallies in the subsequent years. So from October to roughly October this year, 2023, so October 22 to October 23, it had a massive dead cat bounce. And that's all been erased. But what's encouraging is it didn't retest the lows. So I think, its all-time low since this downturn was 3,300 in October 2022. It retested it, but not quite. It hit 3,600, I think, this October. But now we're rallying again. So we're up 10%. So it's really, it's really market-wide. Even when you look at a specific sector, it's gone through those same, maybe the peak and troughs have been higher or lower, but it's gone through the same 1 year of difficulty. It's got a bit of a rally. It's come back. It's been difficult. But now definitely we're seeing a proper rally. And as you've rightly pointed out, you're breaking through some moving averages there, and hopefully, I hope this is the bull market that's long awaited.
Well, I did this a while back. I went through the AIM All Share Index chart, and I looked at the last two times it's happened, 2 years consecutive negative returns, and it's only happened twice as far back as the chart goes, and that was the Great Financial Crash and the dot-com bubble, and the third year it literally rallied like heck. 2009 and into 2002. And apparently, a small cap index as well. If you look at that, it's only been three times that's happened. It's in the 70s. And again, it's never done 3 years negative. And apparently, the second year is always the worst. And then the following year, after 2 years, a heck of a rally. So I think 2024 is going to be a good one. It's a strap in. Take your pick here. Just going to Vox front page here. We've got Shield Therapeutic. In fact, two of the most read down here is Plarium and Shield Therapeutic. So let's go into Plarium, because finally we're getting a bit of a bounce here. Company update has been quiet for a while. But Have you read it? I assume you've read some of this.
Yeah, there's a lot in it. But by the same token, there's nothing material. Like there is no, you know, it's just a nice update to kind of tell us where they're at, which I think is useful. I'm glad they did that. It's helpful because I think there was a bit of a news radio silence on the news front, and people were getting worried, and the shares are going down. Number one thing that's in that announcement that, you know, is reassuring is just the cash position until, I think they say, look, it's not reassuring in that they are running out of cash, but at least they're explicit that they have cash, you know, into second half of 24, which is good. They say Q3 24.
Q3,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and you and I know that could be stretched, in, you know, in an emergency. So, you know, that's good. There is still time to get certain things done and, you know, hopefully, you know, come up with a financing solution, which I think is the main thrust, you know, that's the thrust of what's behind the share price decline is, you know, the concern over the financial position of the company. But I guess the main point in this announcement on that is that it's a little better than needing cashing out next month, right? We're not in that position. We've got at least, you know, anywhere between 7 to 10 months runway as per what they're saying. And then I know, and you know, everyone knows that in an emergency that could be stretched. So that's not plenty of time, but that's good. That's okay. Now the question is, you know, what can they deliver in that time? And you know, they talk about, you know, breaking into new leads. They're still focusing on commercial traction, which is good. They're talking about, you know, establishing. They've talked about their reimbursement, which I thought was really good news. But again, in a difficult market, reimbursement is, you know, what they get reimbursed per scan, right? And under Medicaid, Medicare in the U.S. And what they got is they got not only a reimbursement code, but a reimbursement price. And it's higher than what we had expected initially. And in this announcement, they reiterate what that is, which is $1,200 to $1,300, which is fantastic. I mean, that's very good. They also say, you know, what the hospital request could be for total reimbursement, and that's $2,500. So there's it makes a business case for usage of their product, right? Because not only do they get reimbursed, but the hospitals they're selling into get reimbursed per scan, right? So there is a business case. It's not $50, it's in the thousands, which is exactly what we want to see. So all positive news, but there is still a problem. You know, they're not, the commercial traction is slow, and that's the fundamental issue here. So, you know, what we'd like to see over time is number one thing that needs to happen is they need to, you know, increase their runway for financing. That's going to hang over this business no matter how we like, you know, no matter what we say, no matter what we talk about this company, it's irrelevant while that hangs over them. And I think that, you know, I think that's the problem fundamentally here on the shares. That's putting pressure on the shares. Once that gets resolved, I think you might even just get a rally on the basis of it getting resolved. The problem is, you know, often these things get resolved with discounted placings and, you know, but, you know, there might be other creative solutions and let's hope for that. You know, debt, who knows? I don't know. You know, we'll see what they come up with. But, you know, that's what's weighing on the shares. Once that gets resolved, it buys them more time for the commercial traction to come through, which is, quite frankly, delayed a bit, long overdue, you know, and I just don't know how much traction, you know, they can easily get. It's slow. That's clear.
First and foremost, I always say this, when you're investing in a loss-making company, the most important thing of all is cash. Because if they run out of cash, they've got to get it from somewhere. Normally it's from shareholders or new ones or existing ones. And in this market, we know that the equity, you know, market's been frozen to a certain extent. Or if you do a fundraise, it literally is at a massive discount. And Plarium's done 95% the share price. I mean, the chart is literally horrible. Look at that. From there, they're 95%. In the last 800 odd days. But also, there's some good things in here where they do say expansion, FDA labeling, hopefully. And they talk about their relationship with Philips. They've been doing a training session with them, and they've also signed a contract to sponsor a new clinical trial in patients with COPD in collaboration with a leading nebulizer device. So it seems like they are busy. But like you said, is that a concern? When I first invested in this company, I thought, you know, It's a no-brainer. You know, it's the best tech out there. It's going to get commercial traction. And yet it hasn't really executed on that commercial attraction. And or, you know, the commercialization of this product hasn't been as fast as everyone had hoped or thought. So that's a little bit worrying. Maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe things work slower in the real world. Of course they do. But it's still, the technology is still very relevant and very advanced compared to anything else, isn't it?
For sure. That, you know, I've always liked the technology in this business. I am a bit disappointed by the commercial traction. And that's the problem. You know, that, you know, that's what's led them to get into this situation where they're running out of cash in a difficult market. You know, that combination is not great. So look, those are the problems. The upside, you know, you're right. You know, Philips is mentioned there. We know Bracco, which is another big imaging company, is an investor of theirs. Who knows what's possible there? You know, these are the kind of the unknown surprises that could come. You know, if you strike an agreement with anything like a Philips, these are, you know, those could be material, right?
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine that happening in the next month. Do you know what I mean? I just don't see that happening imminently. But it's possible. And they have partnerships with big, you know, they have a partnership with Philips. So they are interacting with these big companies.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, why wouldn't they? There's a question. They could even get bought out, you know, because at the moment the market cap they're at, you know, if Philips deem it, you know, commercially significant for them, they could buy them out. But and that's why, like I said, we are in a tough market, and you know, we can never, like we just said, the markets are likely to rally in 2024, and with that buoyancy of the markets, then it gets easy to raise money, and you know, the tide will lift all boats, pretty much. So a rising tide, so the share price will go up, and then it'll be easy for them. But you know, it's literally been for them the ascent of a storm that you've had, literally FDA, you know, a complete response letter which wasn't foreseen, and then, you know, took a big hit. They spend more than everything was delayed by years, so their cash got run down. That was in the middle then of the start of the bear market, so it's literally been a nightmare for them, isn't it? The combination of everything, you know,
it has actually. It's been, you know, the ultimate point is they got approved in the end. Right. So, you know, the FDA, not, you know, it is what it is. The regulator, you know, it's not their responsibility what it does to the company. They need the information they need, and that's what they got eventually. But but the shame is that it was delayed a year, you know, but still got approved. Had it been approved in its original, you know, on its original timeline, it would look completely different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They would have been selling it, you know, and they probably would have raised a lot more capital in the bull market. You know?
So a couple of other things. Are you aware of Shield Therapeutics? They do aquaphage.
Definitely.
How
are they doing on the back of today's announcement? I didn't have much of a chance to look at the numbers as compared to what they were saying previously. But on quick glance, is there anything really new material in there? Because I think they made a Q3 pre-close, or like in September they made an announcement with these figures. Was there figures in here?
I don't know, but nevertheless, I think they are getting traction. Of course, it's now they're based pretty much in the US, and of course they're hitting it hard there with their partner and sales partner. And the figures are impressive. I mean, total prescriptions up, you know, 76%, average net selling price increased 24%. They say total net revenue of 4.1 million. So it's all going in the right direction, I think.
Definitely.
Broker notes sort of suggest, you know, decent top line growth. I don't think profitable this year, or next year, or year after, but.
Don't get me wrong. I'm looking at Shield myself personally, thinking of maybe getting in now. You know, I like the pricing, etc. And I have been kind of I just haven't had a real opportunity this morning of looking at the actual results they said. But broadly speaking, this is either is or isn't the hockey stick moment. Okay, so they're seeing good uptake, and quarter on quarter growth is phenomenal. But I think they're expecting and hoping for, I think they said today this 54,000 scripts have been secured this year. And I think they're aiming for something like 100,000 by the end of the year. So, you know, there's a real still demand on the last quarter, right? Yeah. So this calendar quarter that we're in right now is key. To me, that's the danger in this story is that there might be another cash call before they get to break even, which I think is in 25 or 26 or 2025 or something like that, right? So there is still this risk that even if revenues are going like this, you know, and uptake is there, that you have another cash call. And I think that's putting pressure on their shares because, you know, their shares are still under pressure. You know, so let's see.
Look at that. I mean, literally, it's bouncing off that 5.6 pence level. And it's been doing that now since literally July 2022. You know, it's been going up and down. It rallies a bit, comes back.
The one thing that I did see that I thought was good is pricing is moving in the right direction, too. It's not going down. It's going up, which is good. Because I don't quite understand this, and I'll look into it for next time. But you know, there was a risk that they have to give away a certain amount of drug or something like that in there to get people, you know, to start. It's kind of like gross revenue versus net revenue, right? Yeah. So the discounts or the bits that you have to give away for free were quite generous initially, and now they're getting people taking it, and you know they're becoming repeat subscribers. So the worry was that the average blended average pricing was coming down, and you know who knows how far down that would go. Well, it looks like in this update, the pricing is now going back up on average blended average, which is a good trend you want to see. You know what I mean? Yeah. That means that it's working, that their plan is working. The whatever discounts or upfront freebies that they're giving is actually generating the then paying subscriptions. That's key. Sorry, someone is just trying to call.
That's all right. Okay, just going to cover off some comments here. I've got to be careful saying your name again. Daftus Cluck is a pop poster.
Am I there, Justin?
You're still with me. Yes, you're still with
me. Okay, sorry about that.
So Justin, that SBDS thing you discussed yesterday, that's Silver Bullet Data. I do hold shares in that. It's a very interesting company, I think. They are in this space of AI and helping companies get a better return in their advertising because I don't know if you're aware of this, Vadim, but third-party cookies are now being outlawed pretty much. You can't track people on the internet to advertise to them. So this is a company that addresses that very cleverly by using AI and seeing what websites are most relevant to advertisers by reading video and all that stuff. Anyway, someone says the 8.25% declared TR1 was SpreadX as a CFD. How does that work if someone's taking a 1 million placing? I know who it is took the placing. They're a high net worth. That's how they do it. I don't know why they use SpreadX, but they do. Ben, profit warning out today from Future. Yeah, we've talked about that. Future, though, now, literally, are on a PE of something like 4 or 5. Their margins are very good. The operating margin of about 20%. They are generating a lot of cash. They have a net debt. I mean, they've got, but you know, they're generating lots of cash. I wouldn't worry about that. I think they're going to be a good play once the market turns and it digests this news. It's only to a top line miss a little bit, I don't think. Vertu, which is very interesting because we're all seeing now, I don't know if you're aware of Vertu, but if in the cost of living crisis, there are certain stocks that are barometers, aren't there, of the way people are spending. For example, this is Motorpoint, Vadim. This is one of the biggest independent car sellers in the UK. And you can see what's happened here. Cost of living crisis now. People are buying, you know, cars with finance. It's costing like 10%. It's not cheap. So people are not spending on big ticket items. Now, a different player in this space, they just own and sell cars, a Vertu. Now, they have what is a franchise model, which of course is very good because they get paid. But even today, they've come out with a trading update. And, you know, the chart on that is doing very well, completely opposite to a Motorpoint. But they came out with a trading update today, and they do say pretty much there's less selling going on. People are not buying expensive cars. And you can see, and I know, I don't know who that lady is, but you can see, that this cost of living crisis is not going to go away overnight. And I think sometimes you have to make distinction between the economy and the markets. There are still certain sectors of the economy that will be hit for a long time because even if interest rates come down, they're not going to come down in the next 3 months quickly or 6 months quickly. They're going to step down slowly. And in that time, there are businesses going to be hit because people are still suffering from mortgages going up. Like I said, I don't know what percentage it is, but a lot of people, I think more than half, they haven't had renewed their mortgages yet. When they do, that cost of literally they'd have to tighten their belts. They do say here they've been resilient, but changing markets, and they say they see being weak. The board considers the UK used vehicle values are likely to continue to weaken above historic norms. The price of vehicles going down because people are not buying them, and they do say it's not looking good out there. And you can see the outlook. The current consumer environment remains volatile. The board remains cautious in light of external negative factors. And I say, when you're picking stocks, you've got to be aware, haven't you, of where they are. And is this company likely to come up with any better news in the next 3 to 6 months? Apart from cost cutting, if they're not getting the customers in, they can't do a lot, can they, you know?
No, for sure. I mean, look, I agree with you that the cost of living still is still rolling out. That problem is not completely gone away. But you're right. There are certain sectors that are going to, I think, recover. You know, post-COVID, remember we called it the K-shaped recovery? This is like after the original. I think we're going to see that again. You know, we'll see certain sectors coming out faster than others. Some just by the sheer fact that they've been in so long, like tech is already starting to recover. It was first in, right? Yeah. So I think there'll be an element of first in, first out. Tech and healthcare were first in. They slowed way before the rest of the economy type stocks slowed. So, you know, I can tell you from healthcare's perspective, we talked about it earlier, the slowdown started in June, July, 2021. You know what I mean? So now we're well into over 2 years. So, you know, we're seeing a bounce in that sector. Tech is definitely seeing a bounce. It wouldn't surprise me if those sectors came out first or hopefully are starting to. But you're right. Some of maybe the more retail type stocks, you know, might, although I say that, you know, I just earlier said, you said I'm invested in some of them. The Deliveroos of this world are doing okay. They've had a pretty good rally. I think EasyJet's doing really, really good.
Yeah, Deliveroos. I mean, that's a lovely looking chart, to be honest. Look at that. You see that, Eva, when we chatted before, I think I put this line on before, and I said, break above that. They break 200-day moving average there, but then they need to break new highs. And they did here, literally, at 99, well, a quid. You know, and now they're at 137. And like you see that nice little 200-day moving average coming down, bowing around nicely, and a series of higher highs, higher lows. Yeah, it's looking good. What else are you in?
So EasyJet, I think, is just overlooked. I don't know why people, like, believe you me, I'm a healthcare analyst. It's like to be talking about a discount airline or, you know, is not my everyday, but it's a stock that doesn't make sense. It's doing financially exceptionally well. You know, the COVID years are well behind them. Their balance sheet is exceptionally strong. They're not a direct peer of Ryanair. I think a lot of people think of it that way. They're slightly more premium to Ryanair. But look at Ryanair's market cap. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, EasyJet's worth $3.5 billion and Ryanair is worth $15 billion. And yes, they're a larger organization, but not justified by that price differential. You see what I mean?
And if
EasyJet had a balance sheet problem that we could talk about to justify that, yes, but they don't, you know, and, you know, people are worried about the cost of living crisis, which we discussed, and that is a concern. But again, it's a concern for Ryanair too. Why is Ryanair priced at 15, you know, billion and EasyJet priced at $3.5 billion? So I see upside for EasyJet. I think that one is. And plus, you know, I don't know if everyone's been to an airport recently. You can't walk around. There's airports are rammed with people. people are putting you know, travel ahead of, you know, consumer staples.
And, in fact, it's funny you say that. I know, I think people do still hang on to their holidays, especially, you know, I think during COVID, people thought they would miss them so much. I think I always want a holiday once a year at least, you know, or some people, if they got the money, they will go for that and they'll put money aside for that. But look how fast, we're talking about Vertu there, they come out with a trading update, you know, today. Look how fast this changed. This is the end of 31st of August. Their numbers were good, you know, all growing there. This is the interim results. The numbers are good. Only now is that cost of living crisis starting to kick in. And like I say, it's a big lagging factor here. And I think to a certain extent, what's going to happen is you'll see, you know, people after Christmas will be tightening their belts. You see a lot of company comes out with more profit warnings. I think you see jobs sort of going down, the economy taking a hit, and that will stimulate or motivate the central banks to do something because they'll start seeing it really biting, I think, next year. But, you know, conversely, that is very good for the markets because once the central banks are worried, you know, there's only one thing they can do, and that's reduce interest rates. And so I see the markets really. So I generally said yesterday, I see a sort of Santa rally, maybe a seasonal, but I do see a little rolling over maybe in quarter one for the markets. But then I think we'll see, you know, a more dovish talk from the central banks, which will buoy the markets. And then I think the next three quarters, or at least the second half of the year, will be gangbusters, I think. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's not what's happening in the real economy. It's the anticipation of the financial markets that is key, right? You know, they're ahead.
Are you aware of Game Workshop? This is like a stalwart. I don't even know what they really do with these little figures and games that is really Anoraki, but a strong audience. And they've been a sort of market darling for a long time, you know. They do Warhammer, is it, or something like that? I don't know. Are you aware of it, Vadim?
No. I'm thinking of GameStop.
Yeah, no, it's games. It's literally, I'll try and find their, let me just find their website, right? You won't believe this. But they literally are a standout games workshop. They are a standout performer. So this is their website. So a share screen here. Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, reject cookies. Here's cookies. Always relevant. What country am I in? I'm in UK. Yeah, I got that. How do I get rid of that? There we are. So welcome to Warhammer. So all these little toys and games they play, and people buy these machines of war, and I don't know if they play them or paint them, but you wouldn't. I mean, look at this website. You think, this is not a star company. It's not a financial performer. Amazon just bought the rights to televise like Warhammer or something off them, right? And if I show you the chart, it's one of the outstanding performers. Look at this. If we go back to literally, let's go back to sort of 2016. They were 5-6 quid a share. They're at 120 quid a share, right? That's what they topped out at after the bull market. They came down massively, did a deal with Amazon, and they've risen again, sort of over 100 quid a share. Today they came out with a trading update, and it wasn't as strong as people hoped. They just did say top line is in line, everything's in line. But if you look at this, core revenue not less than 235 million. It's not cheap. They're not cheap at all. But they're very sticky customer. You know, I do call them Anoraks, but people love that kind of stuff. But 235 versus 213 is just fine. Licensing revenue is down to 12 from 14.3. Core operating profit is estimated at 82. That's up. But licensing profit, again, is down a little bit. And profit is estimated. The half year results. So it's down 10% today, but it's one of those stocks you've got to keep an eye on because you know they'll bounce back. Because you know their customer is highly addictive, highly sticky, and they love all that kind of stuff. That it doesn't appeal to me. Warriors, I don't understand it. I don't really understand it. It's just these things that people buy and they paint them or buy them. But like I said, Amazon's bought the rights to televise, you know, or something around this. So it's one of the things that has a really niche. Loyal audience, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, and the good thing about that is that it explodes in terms of the revenue generation, right? So you've got the product itself, but then you have the rights to, like you say, like Amazon just bought, the rights to televise, the rights to make movies, and God knows what else. Yeah.
And they are literally, what's the market cap there? They're 3.5 billion, you know. Let's ferocious armies clash without the drawback of actual bloodshed. Founded in 1975. Yeah, it's nuts.
I'll have a closer look.
But they're not cheap. It's like, if you look at that, I mean, what are they saying? You know, 3.5 billion is the market cap, right? So if you look at what is the profit before tax estimated at not less than 94. So let's say 100 million. Let's say 200 million for the year. Is that half year? Or is it half year? Let's say 200 million for the year. You know, and they are 3.5 billion. So you're talking like 25 times, 30 times, you know, PE pretty much.
Yeah.
So they're not cheap.
And
they're
my only concern with these things, and it still seems to be going in the right direction, but, you know, trends come and go. There's also, you know, you're right in saying you've got your diehard fans, but then sometimes the trend passes and people are just not interested in that anymore. You know what I mean? That's always a risk.
Yeah. Right, let's have a look at Graham says here, STX are now getting better margin after discounting heavy last year's. Greg, CEO, says this margin pattern is typical of launch. Informa, how does TUI, have you looked at TUI, how does TUI compare with EasyJet? I've seen TUI recovering well, but not looked into details. I mean, wasn't there any worry about TUI's debt a while back?
Yeah, you know, that's it. TUI's balance sheet comparatively is, I think that's the main difference. Again, I'm not claiming to be a travel analyst, but I can tell you one thing is the balance sheets are drastically different. TUI has had far more difficulty coming out of COVID. You know, they had multiple bailouts. I think the German government bailed them out, you know, two or three times. And there was the balance sheet is just not in the same position, definitely. Yeah. And I think EasyJet with its travel company, see, EasyJet has established a travel company, you know, like, not just the airline, right? So like bookings, booking the whole travel package, like Tui does actually very well. And EasyJet's, that business is going gangbusters. So I think what they're doing is they're starting to steal market share from the TUIs of this world that are struggling in that line of business. So
Yeah.
I mean, without question, my preference between the two is EasyJet, without question.
Yeah. One company actually that had some positive news out today, sort of, which is interesting, AJ Bell. I know, brokers, fund managers, all that, being asset managers, they've all been hammered because, of course, they're playing the market. But,
well, that's good news. That's good news. Yeah. Those are barometers of, you know, sudden liquidity improving, trading improving. I mean, normally. That's normally. Yeah. What was the source of their...
the final results is the year. And I don't know what the second half is like, but a record financial performance, revenue up 33% to 218 million, profit before tax margin of 40%, up from 35%. So the revenue's up, the margins are up, the dividends are good. So another successful year. But if you look at the chart, I said, you know, their main competitor, I suppose, is Hargreaves Lansdown, which is the market leader. That's been hammered. They've all been hammered. But I do see, you know, these are safe recovery plays. These are companies with no debt, lots of cash. And, if you scroll down a minute, how much cash they got?
Because this is very interesting. To me, that these are barometers of things changing in the capital markets, right? So, you're right. Like some still are struggling. Maybe AJ Bell's, I don't know the businesses well enough, but certainly some are better businesses than others. But they're all suffering in a difficult market. So if you're starting to see the better ones move out of that, it means that trading's improved. I don't mean revenue trading. I mean trading of stocks has improved, right? So their revenue source is starting to pick up again. And if people are starting to trade in stocks, that means that, you know, the stock market's starting to reactivate. Because thing we have seen is liquidity's dried up across the board, right, in capital markets. So if liquidity starts to improve, that bodes well for the future.
Yeah, I mean, there we are. Look, operating profit up. You see there from 58 to 86. Profit for the financial year from 46 to 68, pretty much. There's no debt. There's cash of 146 million. They are, I mean, if you look at that, I mean, pretty much, 68. So what's that, 10 times 68? So they are a 20. It's not cheap, not cheap. But, I mean, if you look at the share price, you know, look where we come from. They listed back. They're pretty much back at IPO level. They were, so they listed basically back in 2018 at 218, rallied to 480, and today they are having a nice little bump there. But they're not getting over that 200-day moving average yet because they've been in a downtrend. And same with Hargreaves Lansdown. I mean, Hargreaves is the big boy, the major player here, and they've been hammered. But I do think, like I said, look at Hargreaves Lansdown. It's come down from literally 24 quid to 734. And they've struggled. You know, they come up with results and literally it's dipped down, still in this little bit of a downtrend. But again, once the market turns, these will all rise, these asset managers, these brokers, whatever.
Absolutely. So it's all about trading, right? Like, AJ, I don't know the split of revenues, but I imagine a lot of their revenues come from, you know, commissions on trades, right? Yeah. So if people start trading again, which is usually the case when in an up market, there's just more activity. We know for a fact that there's activity has dried up, and it's proven out by all those share prices of the Hargreaves Lansdowns of this world. So it's good to see that AJ Bell, one of the other big ones, seems to be picking up, because that's an early sign that the markets are bouncing. You see what I mean?
Well, look at that. I mean, that's unusual. I mean, they've obviously nicking market share maybe of Hargreaves Lansdown, because another successful year with customers increasing by 50,000, 51,000 closer to 476,000, and platform net inflows of 4.2 billion. What is the rule of thumb? It's not like a rule of thumb is either 1% or 2% of assets under management. It's a rough rule of thumb, but that's where the market cap should be. So if you look at they got record assets of 70 billion. So what would that be? 7 billion, 700 million. So
that's different though. That, you know, that's what I didn't look at their results. That's why I'm asking is that if it's because of trading improving, then that's what my point was about improvements in markets. If it's just that they're stealing market share and their AUM is improving, that's a different story. That's a company-specific, you know, issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Finish off, Vadim. A couple of macro headlines. House prices. Have you seen all the house builders this week? Barrett Developments, Taylor Wimpey.
Persimmon, which is Persimmon, yeah. Whichever. You know, I don't.
That's what's one of the worst. Never got the ones. That's one of the worst.
No, but it's bounced. Value. It's bounced aggressively. Yeah. It was one I was looking at. You know but that one's like rallied almost 25% in the last.
Look at these. Look at this. This is Barrett Development and Taylor Wimpey, probably the best balance sheets in there. But look at them. Yeah. Look at this. They're at 52-week highs, right? And this is, and Taylor Wimpey as well. 52-week high, exactly the same as that. Persimmon is been a hit bit more. It's not really rallied as much.
But look at its rally. Look at its rally.
I was saying yesterday, that's the barometer. I look back at this. House prices and house builders' prices rallied before the market bottomed in the great financial crash, and that's when they were indebted. Now they're not. Most of them, Taylor Wimpey and Barrett have little or very little or no debt. They're very well capitalized, and so they tend to sort of rally. Interest rates haven't even come down yet. They're still struggling. People are not buying houses a lot as they were, but the fact that they are bouncing says something, doesn't it? It says we've hit the low pretty much. I'm not saying they're going to go straight up here. They may have to roll over a little bit. But the fact they are bouncing at 52-week highs, that is particularly.
Because you have the chart there, go back to the last financial crisis, 2008, and look at the rallies.
I went back a while back, right? I literally looked at them, and they were literally rallying about 3 to 6 months before the end of. Before the end, before go. The markets rallied. There we are. So 2009. And I don't know if this is the same. Yeah, so that's how rallying in May. In fact, it's the same. But I mean, I think there's other ones that were rallying way before. But I looked at them. So, the fact that they bounced literally in November. In fact, the lows in November 2008.
Yeah.
And in the markets was March 2009. So they hit lows before the market did, and they started rising before the market did. So it's a very good barometer. But like I said, the top line here is house prices rise again as mortgage rates rise. They said Halifax said prices rose by 0.5% in November, the second monthly increase in a row.
Yeah, we're on to the third exactly monthly consecutive increase. So it's not just a blip anymore.
Yeah. This is also quite good because, of course, good for the thing. UK's hot labour market shows signs of cooling. As of the start of December last year, there were 48% more job postings on Indeed than before COVID-19 pandemic. But this year, only 10% more than the pre-COVID. So you see that job postings are going down. So that means, of course, more. And even now, so I'm saying that the options of remote or hybrid working have dropped to 14.4% from 16.3% in May, showing less competition in that area. And also, I never understand this. People are using more cash now, right? Because they're saying that it helps them with the budget. And now people stop using card. It's only a little bit because, 76% of all transactions are still on card. But who in their right mind thinks that paying by card is not cash, is not real money? It's real money, ladies and gentlemen. If you're spending something on a card, it's still real money. I need to get some paper money in my hand. It helps me out. I think that's a bit backward, isn't it? I still think I'm spending real money when I use my card. Don't you, Vadim?
Yeah.
I'll get some paper and coins out. It'll help me a little bit. But it does show you cost of living crisis. People are trying to do things to cut back.
But to your point, though, I still think it's looking like a soft landing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hopefully.
You and I have been talking about recession for 2 years. It hasn't come still. There's no recession. Yeah. There hasn't been a recession. Now, we know rates have gone up a lot, but the rates have been up now for a year. We've had rates, drastic increase in rates, but sitting on it, I know mortgages roll over slowly. I get all that, but it just feels like we're, lining up for a soft landing. And you're right. The minute central banks change their tune and start saying we're talking about lowering rates, well, then financial markets go mental, right? But on top of that, the real economy, what's unemployment? It's 4%,
4.2%.
It's the historic lows still. We were lucky enough to see below 4 unemployment, like 3.7, I think, that's unbelievable that we had such low unemployment. So, the economy is resilient. It can tolerate a slowdown without being a massive recession. And that's what we're seeing so far. I just don't believe a mega recession is coming or anything like that.
No, I just, like I said, if you're a stock picker, you just have to be careful the sectors you're into, because there's still some pain to come in certain sectors. And if it's not priced in, if it's not priced in, you can take a hammer in. So,
but of all the places, wouldn't you expect that in the house builders? And now they're rallying.
Yeah,
Of all the places you'd expect that, right?
Well, yeah, I suppose, again, that's it's sort of been priced in, I suppose, house builders. Because if you look at something like, Persimmon, and if you take into account just, broad figures of, like, saying, let's say, this the top to the bottom here. So the highs there was pretty much at this level, 32 quid. They're down now 61%. So they're going to say, I know roughly, are they going to get 60% less orders this year or not? And so you could say pretty much they went down to almost 71% down from the high. Of course, they're in a bit of a bubble market. But you're going to say, even if you price it all in on a figures basis, are they going to sell 50% less houses? Are the margins going to hit? So it's almost priced in, isn't it? I suppose that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. But that's what I mean. The markets have priced in a recession that hasn't happened.
Yeah, there we are. So 2024 is rally time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Marvelous stuff. Thanks everyone for watching. Don't forget to hit that like button if you like the content, and subscribe to the channel. That's all important. Got to hit 5,000 by year end. And download the Vox Markets app, voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Vadim, thanks very much for this. And if you, if you want to pop in next Thursday, by all means, you're welcome. All right, fella.
Perfect. Thank you.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.